From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 27th day of May, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, Europe, Canada, and the United States are coming to an agreement on beef imports from North America. G8 leaders say they're confident the Doha round of trade talks can come to a successful conclusion. And the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture has stepped up to the mic and said, hey, ethanol is not responsible for the high price of corn. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. And then as we close out our program, we'll talk with Jim Angel, state climatologist from the Illinois State Water Survey, on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. The nearby July wheat at $8.19¾ for this year, up 5¼ cents. Next year's July at $9.34½, down 9½ cents. July corn today at $7.58½, up 13 cents. September at $7.28¼, a dime higher. December futures settled at $6.84, up 7¾. And March corn at $6.95, up 6¾. May futures $7.25¾, up 9¼. July soybeans down a nickel today at $13.79¾. August at $13.75¾, 5¼ lower. September beans $13.72, down 5. November down 4 cents at $13.68½ in the bean pit. And January futures at $13.77½ for next year, 3½ cents lower. July bean meal at $3.55.60, down $4.70. July soybean oil, $58.61, 9 cents lower on a Friday. June live cattle futures at $104.10, 7½ higher. August at $105 and a nickel, up 47½. August feeders down 30 at $122, 72½. And September futures there at $124.25 per 100 pounds, a dime higher. June lean hogs at $88.92½, $1.12½ higher. The July at $88.60, up $1.32½. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, July contract, $100.43 a barrel, up 20 cents. June ethanol at $2.66, a penny and 9 cents higher. July natural gas at $4.51¾, that's up 15 and 8 tenths of a cent. And the June heating oil or diesel fuel just about unchanged at $2.98¾ of a cent. The gold futures at $1,536.30. An ounce up $13.50 in the Dow, now 25 points higher at 12,428. The dollar at 74.9, down 0.6. The CRB at 346.27, up 2.94 on the day. The weather forecast says tonight we should see a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the Urbana-Champaign area after 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy, though, a low of 55 degrees, south-southeast winds at 7 to 9. Saturday, tomorrow, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, the high tomorrow near 77 degrees. By the time we get to Saturday night, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms will persist. It'll be mostly cloudy, a low of 65 degrees. On Sunday, partly sunny skies, the high near 86, breezy, south winds at 11 to 20. Sunday night, clear, a low of 69. Memorial Day, should see sunny skies, a high near 90 degrees. Monday night, clear, a low of 71. Tuesday, sunny and a high of 88. Tuesday night, cloudy, a low of 64. Wednesday, sunny, a high of 84. Wednesday night, cloudy, a low of 60. And Thursday, should see mostly sunny skies, a high near 81 degrees. A more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast for you. When we get to the bottom of the half hour, we'll talk with Jim Angel. He's the state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey, located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's a Friday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report. On the phone line with us, as he is each and every Friday today, Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hello there, Todd. Hey, happy Memorial Day, and a big thank you to all our servicemen and women on this holiday weekend.
Absolutely. Thank you so much to the servicemen and women, and thank you, too, to you, Mike, for taking the time to be with us this afternoon. Take a look back over the week. It was an interesting one. What did you find most notable?
I was disappointed with the price action, quite frankly, Todd. You know, coming off the commodity week last week, seeing another week of lost planting in terms of the Eastern Corn Belt, another week of a dry European wheat belt, and we could barely muster a positive session, and we actually went down to steady to flat on the week at the beginning of today's trade. Now, by the close, we were able to get up, and the corn was a little under 20 cents higher in the Dease contract. July was able to make a new weekly high on the close with a nice strong push led by the July Dease corn spread. But I think overall the trade flipped back on worrying more about export demand and thinking that the weather was going to clear up instead of building risk premium going into what I would classify as one of the most important three-day weekends in probably 20 years. So I guess I was disappointed by this week's trade.
Were you disappointed that December corn was not able to push through that new contract, I suppose? It made it by a quarter of a cent yesterday, but settled at 84 today and couldn't manage to break through it for the week.
Yeah, and I think Thursday's trade was the big one for me. When the chips just seemed to come off the table on Thursday after lunchtime, and again, it goes back to the shifting by the trade mindset and the trade sentiment. And I think my point in bringing up this disappointment is I had to remind myself that, once again, we're dealing with a market that no longer really deals in terms of market outlook and looking down the road. It doesn't look out a month or 3 months or 4 months, in my view. It's looking out 2 days to a week as far as its horizon of wanting to put prices into the market and expectations and putting risk premium in or taking risk premium out. And I think this week was a wonderful week to once again prove to me and show me that that's exactly how this market is. It's just a nervous market. It has very little confidence, and it waffles, for lack of a better term. And early in the week, we gave up a lot of premium. Fortunately, we did put that premium back in, but look what we had to go through in the meantime. So the charts look really, really interesting after this week. The spreads look really, really interesting after this week, and there is really no good conclusion. Well, that's because the trade horizon is so short, and I think we in the markets and especially producers that are struggling to get corn planted or struggling with getting ponded fields to get them replanted, and as you go east, it gets worse and worse and worse from what I saw on my crop tour on Monday. I think we have to keep that in mind as we go through these three-day weekends.
Is a nervous trade indicative of anything historically in the marketplace, consolidation, topping, bottoming, anything like that?
I don't think so. I mean, that's not what I see right now. I guess what I continue to watch for is the idea that the outside markets, the Greek debt issue, the high gasoline prices, the lower livestock markets. It's interesting to note, and this is probably something that will not come to the forefront in trade for quite some time, but I noticed that on the weekly slaughter data, the four-week ending sow slaughter numbers are up 6% for the last 4 weeks compared to the previous 4 weeks. And I found that very, very interesting because it indicates that we are starting to see some liquidation pressure, and I think the hog industry and the hog trade is not ready for that pressure yet. I think they're expecting it to come maybe in a few months, but I think these are the kind of things that maybe indicate to me that the trade is very, very nervous about demand just falling flat on its face, going to zero, and they're going to be left holding the bag with all these long positions.
So what does a producer make of it then?
Well, it's the question goes back to, okay, if the outside markets do not move sharply lower and we don't go into a double-dip recession, you ask yourself, is supply falling faster than demand? I ask myself that every week. In the feed grains, I continue to think that, yes, supply is falling faster than demand. In the oil seeds, I think this week once again shows that demand is falling faster and that supply is actually going up. We had very poor weekly export sales this week in the beans for new crop. And I think part of the reason why the beans ended lower today was because the meal gave way. That due to the Western Corn Belt and the cash meal prices slipping quite a bit at the end of the day. So I think that's how I play it, is between the Memorial Day holiday and the July 4th holiday. I want to be a hedger, but I want to be a hedger on paper. I want to start in the beans or continue to roll up puts in the beans and then come around and do corn later down the road. I still think at the end of the day there is supply-demand justification for the July wheat or the September wheat to be moving above $9, not below $9, given the global supply-demand and given our spring wheat situation.
So for soybeans, your thought process says supply in the bean or demand for the beans is decreasing more quickly than potential bean crop for the coming year. Right?
Exactly right.
And
yep.
then exactly the opposite for corn. But that, given that in corn and the nervousness in the marketplace, does that mean a stable but nervous marketplace in the current high price zone, or and waiting for what, June 30?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and let's follow it down the path with the beans. If I'm really correct in the analysis that not only is the demand falling, but the supply is going up in beans, there should be really little reason why the November beans would take out that three-month resistance on a weekly close and move above $14. So that's my breaking point. That's where you say to yourself, the analysis is wrong. Something is wrong here. Maybe it's because we aren't planting beans like we should be planting. So if you go above $14 on a weekly close in November beans and you're short like I am, everybody out of the pool.
So let me ask you another question. I think I know the answer to this one, but why would we not be planting the beans?
Well, in case we stayed wet, I actually got an email, and this is something I wasn't going to bring up, but it's worth mentioning now that we've gone down this path. I actually got an email from one of my weather consultants, and he said the GFS model that everybody's talking about getting warm, it looks like it's going to break down in terms of the ridge. It's not going to stay warm and dry. We're actually going to moderate in temperatures. That's probably going to introduce more precip for the middle to later part of next week for that Ohio River Valley. And I think here again, maybe the trade caught on to that because the midday models did shift to more of a wetter and cooler bias, just a hair. But I don't think they've done anything to really put that into the price. If we continue to see that bias past June 10th, I think then you can start talking about as much losses in bean acres as you can, or almost as many losses in bean acres as you can in corn right now.
Well, let me ask you this question, because
sure.
I'm not quite certain that I know the answer, and I think I do, but aren't all acres corn acres at this point, once you get to June 5 for prevent plant?
Aren't all corn acres what?
Right. So aren't all acres corn acres once you get to June 5? It doesn't matter. So if you get to June 5 for crop insurance, are they all corn acres? Doesn't matter because when do you have to declare your crop insurance acres, right?
Well, true, but I think it goes back to some people have told me that they will go ahead and go past June 5.
Right. But aren't all... Don't you have to think of all acres as corn acres? And so if that's the case, and prevent plant actually causes folks not to plant because the economics work the other way around, they
right.
Can, right? Does that draw bean acres out too? I mean, what were potential bean acres?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I've got a guy in Van Wert.
I've got to ask somebody about the crop insurance part of it because I don't know and I don't remember.
Yeah, but I've got a guy in Western Ohio. He wanted to plant 650 acres of corn. He's turned all his corn seed in. He's gotten about 150 acres in. He's turned all his seed for corn in now, and he's going to go to beans. But what I'm getting at is if we're 2-3 weeks down the road, those beans, even if they get planted, will have a pretty poor likelihood of making a full yield. Then you'll start to hear the Board of Trade people talk about how we're going to go back below 100 million bushel carryover for the 11-12 crop. That's where it goes back to. What's the best technical indication to me that being bearish beans is wrong, and that's if we go above $14 and no beans on a weekly close.
All right. I'm going to dare to do something here because my phone line in studio is ringing. Can you grab that and see if that's a crop insurance person for me? Thank you. I may have an answer. I don't know who will be on that line. Once in a while, the phone line rings in studio, so I might get an answer. Oh, they're gone. Apparently not.
The producers have a choice to go ahead and plant beans, but my understanding in most policies they'll only get about 35% of a claim. So they'll get insured on beans, but their corn claim will drop from, I think, 65% down to 35%. So you can go ahead and plant beans and still get a small claim out of your corn, but that's the trade-off.
All right.
I hope that answers the question. I'm not sure where you're heading.
Well, we'll see, and I'll try to straighten it out for Commodity Week. I've got a couple of hours before I get to that. Because I don't want to go down a path that I did, and I didn't ask Gary Schnitke earlier in the week that question, but I'm not sure that that's not right.
That was a good interview, by the way. That was a real nice interview, very informational and very timely.
Oh, thanks. Gary did a nice job with that, and he and I had discussed it earlier. But we were working with 180 bushel to the acre, which is the central Illinois kind of farmland, and it makes a difference when you switch to 150.
Yes, exactly.
On the APH.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, whatever your point is, I think at the end of,
Thanks, Mike.
Well, I mean, I think what you're trying to drive at is where are we next week on the crop progress report, and I look at the prices at the close today in corn. And I think to myself, if Indiana is no better than 75% planted in corn and Ohio is no better than 25% planted in corn, I would think these prices should be a little bit higher than they are right now. And that's kind of where I ended at the end of the week.
Okay. Let's see. What else? Because I've blown through a lot of time, so we're just going to talk for a while. What are producers asking you when they call? Mostly.
Well, most of them are saying at this point, if they are west of Champaign,
right. They're
saying, tell me when you're ready to sell, and I don't mind doing paper positions, but I want to do new crop paper positions. I don't want to do July puts. I don't want to do August puts, September puts. I want to do new crop puts. I want a floor in place all the way through fall. I don't mind spending the extra money. You go east of Champaign, and that discussion changes quite a bit, Todd, and then you get east of Indianapolis, and a discussion comes into, I need to buy my lost bushels back right here, right now. I don't care if July corn 750. Map me out a way to buy, and then tell me, suggest to me or recommend to me, if we break through a certain technical level, pull me out so I don't lose all my option premium. So we've got kind of a split corn belt all over again this year.
All right. And then take me back through some of the wheat things, because on a global side, that's a pretty important issue as we head through these summer months when we should be harvesting the bulk of the wheat that the globe manages to pick up because it's all grown in the northern hemisphere.
Exactly, and I'm glad you brought that up because we've lost supply in the spring wheat here in this country. Saskatchewan is, I think, 25 to 30% behind their five-year average. Yeah, they're at 54% right now. They should be at 72%. And you had very limited rains in Europe once again, and the month of May makes the French crop. So what held us back? Well, Minneapolis actually took out its February high. It's actually, if you looked at July wheat right now in Chicago, it should be up about $1.40, challenging its February high if you use Minneapolis as a barometer. So Minneapolis ran with Europe, but Chicago did not. Why was that? Well, I think it goes back to the outside markets. And overhanging the market was this Russian grain ban being lifted. That's probably the biggest wild card when we come back from the holiday for the wheat, is if they lift that ban and they export again, a sell-off I think is really possible. But if they don't lift that ban, I think expect some end-user buying to come in right away on ideas that we've lost more supply. We better not wait any longer. So I think it could be a very violent wheat market next week based upon if Russia makes a decision.
And then finally, Mike, if you could take me through some of the decisions producers in Ohio that you deal with are working through at this point, how soon do they think, if they don't get rain, that they might be able to get into the field?
The best case scenario I heard today was a guy in Columbus. He only had 1.4 inches. He said, if I get nothing and it's 90 degrees in terms of no more rain and it's 90 degrees by the time we get to the holiday, I should be able to get in next Wednesday, next Thursday. I will push hard to get corn in. If you're looking past next weekend, they have already thrown in the towel, from what I can tell, Todd, unless they have livestock or they already have some contracts that they have to fulfill. This guy in western Ohio, he's near Van Wert, that 150 acres of corn is all he's going to get in. He feels strongly that he won't have a chance. Even if he got in, the yields wouldn't be there to make it worth his while, and that goes back to you and Dr. Schnitke's comments. In conversation is, even if you get in, you still got to get that 150 yield, and that's where in that part of the country that gets harder and harder to do because they're coming off the Lake Erie, and unfortunately that used to be kind of a bog in that area, and they drain that, so it's really tough ground once it gets saturated.
And then one other item, because I was looking at this. You talked about the hog numbers earlier and possible liquidation there. But on the flip side, the livestock for beef cattle seem to be really pretty good-sized numbers.
No question about it. You've got a really nice livestock outlook. Whether you're talking about cattle or hogs, you've got a really nice livestock outlook number. The problem becomes is that you're already probably coming in, like the ethanol guys, who are looking at not having enough corn in the fall, and probably looking at shutdowns, you're probably looking at a big shift and drop-off in demand and future demand for livestock, because your weights are probably going to go down quite a bit. And if you do liquidate hogs, that will mean down the road towards the fall, it seems like everything's kind of centering upon the fall time period, that the market is starting to look forward in terms of the real market, in terms of livestock and ethanol demand users, saying let's go ahead and cut back so that when we do have this crunch in supply, we're going to not have as much demand. And it makes sense, because we're looking at 30 to 40 over in terms of basis in Ohio right now for spot corn. Well, the Gulf is at 60 to 61 over. So you're looking at, you know, basis that's extraordinarily tight, and you're going to have probably this scenario develop if we don't get planted, where you'll have the eastern Corn Belt pulling corn out of Indiana and maybe even eastern Illinois because it's such a large area. So it makes sense why those hog producers and cattle producers and ethanol producers would want to be dwindling down and cutting their demand later down the road here.
Well, thank you so much for spending so much time with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Happy holidays.
Hey, you too. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take up the cash grain market today, Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about your bids there. Are they overs yet, and do you think that they will be?
We are just to overs right now. We're one over on nearby corn and option on nearby beans. You know, that's up from a one under last week and a 14 under to start the month at. And I'm on the CN, and that feeds New Orleans. So we're kind of on the tail end of this basis rally. Big trains of origin weights on the CSX or the NS are seeing some pretty wild numbers out there.
Like what?
Oh, upper 30s trading into ethanol plants on the Indiana-Ohio border. Trains going into the Carolinas getting bought back in because they're not getting grain in the ground. I'm hearing some boats being delayed into the Carolinas on wheat boats, so they had to come in and cover a couple spot trains. So that has generated some real fireworks.
Hold it. When they bring the train back, are they feeding the ethanol plants out?
Well, people buying trains back.
That's got to be a heck of a decision to make.
Yeah, when you buy it in, it is not a money-making proposition.
All right. Well, I didn't have a lot of time to spend with you, so give me your actual bids for the day.
We are at 760 on nearby corn and 1380 on soybeans.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company. He's out of Ludlow, Illinois. In just a couple minutes, we'll take up the agricultural weather forecast. Jim Angel, Illinois State Water Survey climatologist, will be here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
It's National Grape Popsicle Day. The invention of the popsicle goes to Frank Epperson, who in 1905 mixed some soda, water, powder, and water together and left the mixture on the back porch overnight with the stirring stick still in it. That night, the temperature dropped to a record low that froze the mixture solid. 18 years later, in 1923, the Epsicle hit the market in 7 fruit flavors. The name was later changed to the Popsicle. In the first 4 years, Epperson sold more than 60 million ice pops. On this day in agricultural history in 1907, Rachel Louise Carson was born. An American biologist, Carson wrote Silent Spring. The book was concerned with the dangers of environmental pollution, especially DDT. In 1930, Richard G. Drew of St. Paul, Minnesota, patented transparent cellophane adhesive tape. He worked out a deal with 3M to market the tape under the trademark Scotch. In 1933, the first automatic soda fountain dispenser was introduced by Coca-Cola. And in 1941, the U.S. Federal Register published the definition of enriched flour, giving specifications for required amounts it must contain of vitamin B, niacin, and iron. By the way, the effective date of riboflavin as a required ingredient of enriched flour is postponed until April 20th of 1943 because the available supply was inadequate. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. I just made a quick phone call and talked to Wayne Nelson because he does a lot of crop insurance. And his answer to our question, I think, is right. I'm sure it is right. He tells me that on Prevent Plant, that you cannot take Prevent Plant on corn acres on any more than your average. I think that's right, too. Over the last 4 years. So it's total number of acres. So I was wrong in my assumptions. We've got a correct answer on that one now. So let's take a look now on this Friday afternoon at the agricultural weather forecast. Jim Angel, who is state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey, joins us. Hi, Jim.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You're at a brand new facility, relatively speaking. Or
that's
center,
right.
Right?
That's right. Yeah, the new Prairie Research Institute. It's kind of the umbrella organization or institute for all the surveys, scientific surveys in Illinois.
Tell me about the weather forecast, what you see in the coming week.
Well, if we look at this weekend, I think the big news is it's going to warm up each day. It's a little chilly today out there, but by tomorrow it'll be a little nicer. And by Sunday and Monday, we could get up into the upper 80s, perhaps even see 90 degrees through much of the state. Then it'll cool off a little bit over the next couple of days after that. There's a high-pressure system probably going to dominate much of next week. So I think we'll probably see temperatures getting back closer to normal for this time of year, which is, for us is about upper 70s in the northern part of the state and low to mid-80s in the central and southern part of the state.
And that high-pressure system will dominate here. Will it dominate in those areas that really need yet to plant? So Indiana, Ohio, southern Illinois?
Yeah, I think it'll certainly help out there. I think there's really nothing on the in the models to any widespread rain until about the middle of next week, and that's more kind of the northern Midwest. So I think everything right now looks pretty good.
And how did the month of May turn out? And it's not done yet, but what's it look like historically?
Yeah, if you look at it for where we stand right now, rainfall-wise, we're about 5 inches. That's just about 7/10 above average. And temperature-wise, we're at 61 degrees for the month, and that's 1.2 degrees below average. So, you know, it's seesawing back and forth every week on the temperatures. 1 week it's exceptionally hot, and the next week it's cold. But it's just kind of averaged out to near normal at this point.
And finally, give me a Memorial Day forecast.
Okay, it's going to be a hot one this year. I think most places are going to be close to 90 degrees, but no rain. It's going to be plenty sunny that day.
Okay, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And that is Jim Angel. He's at the Illinois State Water Survey, where he serves as the Illinois State Climatologist. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, including the Commodity Week program. We'll record that at 4:30 this afternoon, post it to the website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock this evening. Our guest, Jerry Goodell of North America Risk Management. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.